Hi, everybody. I'm Beattie Cohn-Redos, and welcome again to the Ask Beattie Show. And what I can assure you, my friends, it is not just the Beatles who are needing help and people are needing to talk to other people. And there's more and more feelings of isolation and depression. And I'm hearing this every single day, not only from patients that I treat here in New York City and in East Hampton, but from friends and from family alike. So you are not alone. And the reality is that the depression numbers, I suspect, have really, really gone up in the last number of months with the pandemic. I mean, worldwide, I cite the statistics, about 350 million people are suffering from depression. In the United States, and I know this number has certainly skyrocketed since March, 16 million adults, which translates into 1 in 5 Americans, are suffering, and I don't use that word lightly, are really suffering from depression. 40 million adults are having to deal with a variety of different kinds of anxiety disorders. I mean, people these days, with everything that is going on politically and economically and with the COVID virus and concerns about health care and racism and the protests and mental health, I don't know anybody who has not been experiencing some depression, even if it's mild depression or some feelings of anxiety and worry. And my friend Lori Gottlieb, in her New York Times best-selling book, Maybe You Should Talk to Somebody, of course, she was also talking about her own therapy, and she was very, very brave in coming out and saying, listen, it's not just my patients, but I've also gone through some traumas. In her case, it was a very unexpected and painful breakup. So that, you know, my message to you is that we really do need to give ourselves permission, if nothing else, then to get a second opinion, a second and new perspective on why our lives and our relationships are just not going in the direction that we would like. Suicide attempts by young people quadrupled over the past 6 years. You know, when I think about my own childhood in Winnipeg, in fact, Jim and I, we were talking about this yesterday. I was lucky enough to grow up in a neighborhood where we didn't have to plan play dates. People left their houses. We skipped. We played volleyball. We played baseball. It was a lot of fun. It was a carefree life. And when I read about the statistics, I mean, suicide statistics of young people quadrupling over the past 6 years. And also since 2011, there's been a 40% increase nationally for self-poisoning by young people. And listen to this statistic. The suicide rate amongst people ages 10, yes, that is 10 years old, that is a little kid, to 24, increased by 56%. Homicide by intimate partners increased by 26% from 2010 to 2017. It's really interesting. I called the National Association of Domestic Violence, and I think that there's something that we really do have to acknowledge with all the podcasts, with all the relationship dating shows and books. We're still really missing the mark. And what I have found in the world of domestic violence, we certainly need to spend a lot more time. And of course, it's not just the world of domestic violence. It is the world of relationships. And of course, I've been a proponent of relationship education since my days many, many years ago in Montreal. And it needs to begin at the beginning. It needs to begin with very, very young children, where we teach them about what is a healthy relationship and how do we communicate and how do we express our feelings and deal with problems in a really, really healthy way. Because so much of the literature, when we talk about domestic violence relationships, has to do with what to do after the fact. And my program, it's a program that's actually based on my research and my book, For Better, For Worse, Forever, Discover the Path to Lasting Love. My program is how to stop domestic violence before it starts, because there are always, always signs and symptoms if we know what the signs and symptoms are, and if we give ourselves permission to actually listen and watch what these signs and symptoms are, to avoid violence, whether or not we're talking about physical violence, emotional and mental abuse, before it actually has an opportunity to begin. Because look, again, four women are killed every single day by their partner. And I know for those of you who've been listening to the Ask Beattie show, today is the 304th Ask Beattie show since I have been with the Progressive Radio Network. And I actually started doing call-in counseling radio talk shows on the very interesting station in Rhode Island, WPRO. They gave me an opportunity before I was at all a seasoned media person. And what was so great about that show, and of course I encourage you every single week to give yourself permission and call me. So my Ask Beattie show on WPRO in Providence, Rhode Island, was a call-in counseling show. So people would call with their questions, and there was a lot of dialogue and a lot of interaction. And I think a lot of people were gratified, and hopefully they left the show feeling that at least some of their issues were being acknowledged and addressed and hopefully resolved. You know, we look at the divorce rate, which I also talk about every single week, again, with all the dating and the books and the courses. We continue to really miss the boat, and therapists and educators, we need to be honest with ourselves and stop pretending that somehow we are making a dent. First marriages, the divorce rate is 48%. For second marriages, it's 67%. You wonder, from marriage number two to marriage number three, of course, from marriage number three, that divorce statistic happens to be 74%. And I must say, you can eat all the wonderful foods, as Gary Null tells us to do. And I know that Jim and I, we've really, really incorporated the Dr. Gary Null protocol, and it has made a huge difference in our lives. But coming from my field as a psychotherapist and a sex therapist, we can eat well and we can meditate and we can exercise. But unless we are prepared to deal with our issues, our current and our past issues, we are not going to be able to enjoy a good quality of life and certainly a good quality of relationships. So we have work that we need to do. It's not fun, it's not sexy, it's not romantic, but in order, and I have really identified, I've thought about this now for over 35 years. I have treated thousands of people from every walk of life with every kind of presenting problem. And I know definitively that unless we are prepared, each of us, unless we are prepared to deal with our emotional and our psychological and our psychiatric issues, the abuse, our family of origin problems, what happened and what did not happen in our families, we always then walk around with this cloud where we have one foot in the past and one foot in the present. And I know, because I do so much relationship education, you know, people would say, we just want to find a really good guy, or we want to just find a really terrific woman, without dealing with their own issues. And then they wonder, why is it that I am continuing to attract people that are really not in our best interest? So for us to succeed, whether or not we're talking about business, whether or not we're talking about our professional lives, our personal lives, or our personal and also our professional collegial lives, the first step is that we have to look at ourselves. In fact, I'll tell you a really interesting, sad story that happened last week. I was taking a walk in Riverside Park, and I happened to bump into a woman who lives in my building. And I asked her how she was, and she said, well, she says it's been a really interesting kind of summer. She says, I got married. And I said, wow, you got married. That is so great. And then she said, well, guess what happened? And I said, well, what happened? She said that we got married, and within one week, the marriage was over. So we're walking around the park, and she had a really important thing that she was able to communicate to me, and of course, much more importantly, to herself than to me. She said, I was toxic. She said, my husband was terrific. He was a really, really good guy, and we had gone out for quite a long period of time. And she was able to acknowledge, and I think it was very painful for her to acknowledge, that she brought into her relationship and into her marriage a lot of issues and a lot of problems that stemmed from her earlier life that she had not bothered to up until this point in her life to acknowledge and address and resolve. So I felt so badly for her, and I went up into our apartment, and I autographed my book, For Better, For Worse, Forever, Discover the Path to Lasting Love, which teaches people, of course, how to assess who's right for you and who's wrong for you before committing to any relationship. However, when it comes to assessing your partner or potential partners, the same kind of assessment, the same kind of self-assessment really does need to be gone. So I suspect if this woman is serious and she has found a therapist, that she is going to once and for all deal with her unfinished business and her skeletons in the closet, so that hopefully she is then going to be able to be very, very clear about her own baggage and the baggage that she has brought into her relationship with her now ex-husband, and will be able to move forward with new information about herself, with new perspectives about herself. And this is really the job. This is really the job for all of us. And then, of course, you know, we do need to learn about the ingredients that go into a healthy relationship. And again, if we are going to be careful in our relationships, if we do not want to end up in domestic violent relationships, we need to be willing to stop. We need to be willing to slow down. We need to slow down and really take the time to assess and find out once and for all who our partner is and who our partner is not. And unless we're prepared to do that, we are going to find ourselves over and over and over again repeating the pattern of early relationships. So there's a learning curve here. And, you know, people these days, we want to learn all kinds of things. We want to learn languages. We want to learn how to do social media. We want to learn a lot of different things. And yet there seems to be, despite the books, despite the podcast, despite the shows, there seems to be a block for so many people to want to learn more about themselves, you know, the honest, the good, the bad, the ugly, and more about what makes for a healthy relationship. So hopefully, I am able to convince you. And if you're not able or you're not prepared to do it by yourself, to reach out to somebody, to a qualified therapist who can help you tackle all of these issues and more. Now, we cannot, of course, forget about what's still going on with the pandemic. You know, I was looking at the figures in Florida. You know, for those of you who know me, you know I lived in Sarasota, Florida for a number of years, and the coronavirus cases in Florida are starting to really spike. There were over 5,000 cases that were diagnosed in the last few days. So it's still very important, even though things are opening up around the country, to wear the masks and to maintain the social distance. You know, this morning I was playing tennis, and I must say that was a mistake for me. I had a little sort of a hip issue, and instead of giving myself a couple of extra days to rest, I went out on the courts with my pro, and I was in a lot of pain. So I think I'm going to be paying the price for a couple of days at least. But I was looking around, and it seemed that fewer people in Riverside Park here in New York City were being compliant. Now, at the tennis courts, there were only 3 courts open. That was 3 out of 10, and people were not permitted at all to congregate. But I think that we have to be honest and we have to be realistic, and this is still a threat. It's still a serious threat, so that we do have to make sure that we are following the national health protocols about all of this. So I'm going to ask you, are you being careful? Are you taking the necessary precautions? And yet there are other issues that are still really plaguing so many people. You know, can I pay my rent and buy food? The concern about losing my job. I mean, things have really changed. I've been talking to people who have small businesses, hair salons, very concerned. Customers are worried about coming in. Of course, there has been real reorganization, whether or not we're talking about restaurants or other kinds of businesses. But I was talking to the owner of a hair salon yesterday, and, you know, she's very concerned that her clientele that she's had for a long, long time are very reluctant to come in. And it's sort of strange. You know, I had my hair cut yesterday, and the first thing that happened is that she took my temperature. Fortunately, it was fine, and, you know, Jim and I have been fine throughout all of this. But yes, life has certainly changed a lot. And people are concerned, you know, about their financial well-being, their professional well-being. There are people who have worked in the Broadway world for many, many years, the creative aspects of Broadway. And, of course, I just read in the news that Broadway is going to be dark through 2020. So look at all the people who have lost their jobs, have lost their positions, and we really don't have any idea when things are going to come back. I hear every day from patients concern about, you know, am I actually still at risk, and what's going to happen, especially people who are living alone. What's going to happen if I get sick? And is my health insurance going to cover any catastrophic illness? And the social isolation this is something I want to spend a lot of time talking about today with you. It's really killing a lot of people. I have patients, single people, particularly women in their 60s, who are really, really suffering. At least fortunately now, they're able to get out and are able to, you know, interact with friends. And the working from home, in certain ways, it's made life easier. But in many, many ways, for people, particularly single people and older people who are living alone, it has caused a lot of upset and a lot of depression. I think that sometimes we would take for granted that we would go to work and we would interact and we could hug somebody and somebody could hug us. And yet all of this is changed. And I hear that people now are applying for unemployment insurance. There is concern about daycare. I know that people are sending their children back to daycare. And of course, schools are supposed to be beginning in the fall, as usual. But there are a lot of unknowns, and it's these unknowns that are causing a lot of upset and a lot of anxiety. You know, I've mentioned before that the self-help hotline calls are surging, which I see as a really positive thing, that people are realizing that they don't need to navigate all of this uncertainty and upset on their own. You know, the other thing, too, is that 50% of the people who have been working from home are feeling extremely anxious and extremely disconnected, even though, again, businesses are really starting to open up. I've mentioned previously that the alcohol consumption rate has jumped. People were, of course, exercising less and eating more. And hopefully with the nice weather, we are going to give ourselves permission with masks to walk around and move. And movement, as we know, is so very important for our well-being. I don't know what I would have done throughout my life if I was not somebody who exercised and, of course, competed in a variety of sports, including tennis. But when we look at all of this, I still really feel, and it'd be really interesting to hear from you. By the way, give yourselves permission to give me a call now on the show. And that call-in number is 888-874-4888. Because I know that many people listen to the show, and I'll get texts and I'll get emails. And I'm sure that many of you have questions and comments. And I always encourage people to disagree and to debate. And we can have some nice on-air conversation. But with the trauma that's occurred and the crises that has occurred, you know, i.e. the pandemic, it has just exacerbated a lot of other things in our lives that we had to deal with and we continue to have to deal with, you know, prior to the pandemic. But I think that for many people, it has been a time to reflect really about our lives. What kind of lives do we want to live? Do we want to stay in the big cities? Do we want to live? Do we want to change careers? Also a time to really reflect and reevaluate our relationships. What relationships are important? What relationships are healthy? What relationships might be toxic? So reflecting and reevaluating and hopefully resetting can really put us in a perhaps a better place than we have been in before. And what I have found as a sex therapist and a sex therapist, that crises, we hate crises, we hate change, but that crises are the very, very best time for people to stop, for people to reflect, for people to reevaluate and reset and to acknowledge and address and resolve issues. It takes us out of our comfort zone. And for many people, it could probably be the best thing that ever could have happened. So if you're looking at your life, I want you to be aware of, you know, your mood, how you're feeling, and if your depression or your anxiety is worsening, really give yourself permission and reach out and ask for help. And you don't have to be in therapy for 1,000 years. If your relationship, if you're finding that your relationship, and of course, so many people, you know, have been self-isolating and, you know, you can't be with anybody 24 hours a day and not have a lot of ups and downs, but it is a time to evaluate and reevaluate our relationships, our professional lives as well. As I mentioned, the substance abuse statistics have been up during these last several months, and it's a time for you to evaluate and reevaluate all kinds of things that get in the way of your life and your relationships, your alcohol perhaps, your drug use. Do you find that your drinking is increasing? And what about your temper and your anger? Do you see yourself becoming more and more and more agitated and angry, and perhaps you don't even know why? And as I have found, and as I have talked about for many, many, many years, it's not about, if we're talking about anger, if we're talking about upset, if we're talking about embarrassment, or if we're talking about disrespect, it's not about not expressing these feelings. This stuff, you know, this stiff upper lip business, it really doesn't work very, very well. It may work for a very short time, and then the pot ultimately is going to boil over. But it is about finding the way and finding the words and finding the place and the time to say all of this well, to give yourself permission to express the full gamut of emotion. And if you're in a relationship with somebody, hopefully your partner is able to listen and understand and respond in a sensitive, compassionate way. So it's not about not, you know, communicating. It's finding the way. And I think this is something else that we have not learned very well to do, which is how to say it well. And I'm not talking about, you know, where are we going to go for dinner or what kind of an item that we are going to buy in the store. Emotions are complicated and dicey. They are in the best of relationships, and yet people's communication and problem-solving skills, I think for most of us, we have a long, long way to go when it comes to being much more effective in the areas of communication and problem-solving. And this is where couples, you know, really their relationships can be made or they can be broken because of these particular issues. And also, are you taking care of your physical health? Dr. Gary Nowell, he reminds us every single day the importance of eating well, of course, the plant-based diets and taking the necessary supplements and vitamins, and of course, exercising, and making sure, I want to add to that list, of course, is keeping the toxins out of our life. And when we talk about toxins, we typically think about chemicals, you know, chemical kinds of toxins. And of course, when I talk about toxins, I talk about toxic people, and I talk about toxic relationships. And I think that we have to be very, very honest with ourselves to evaluate and reevaluate our relationships. And for me, I have a zero tolerance for toxicity of any kind in my relationships, because if we allow it, and this is something that is within our power. I mean, I'm not talking about young children who, if they are unlucky and they have grown up in a toxic relationship, I mean, they had no power, they had no option, they were just stuck. But as adults, we have the power. We really do. And if we don't feel it, and if we need to have somebody else help us to gain our sense of power and to gain our sense of self-esteem, we have to do whatever it is that we need to do to extricate ourselves from all toxic relationships, including our personal relationships with partners, our family, our siblings, our colleagues, our bosses, because it affects us on every single level, emotionally and physically and psychiatrically. And the other thing that so many people, I find, really forget in the midst of everything that is going on in our crazy, crazy life these days is self-care, is to give yourself permission to relax and just take an hour a day to just chill out. You know, what I have been doing, and this was at my daughter Jordana's suggestion, I have started to take a French course. Now, when I lived in Montreal, I worked 50% in French, and my French was really, really good. But after having moved to the United States, and this is a long time, this is over 30 years, I have not used my French very well, and my vocabulary and my grammar is certainly not what it was. So what I've been doing, and I want to tell you about the site because it's free, it's called Duolingo, D-U-L-I-N-G-O. So I started to take, I would say, an intermediate course. And this is a great way. Every single night at about 7 o'clock, I get this email from Duolingo reminding me that it is time to go to the computer and start to practice my French. So we each have to, I mean, French and languages, that may not be your thing, and that's fine. But I think that we all do need to find our things, whether or not it's meditation, whether or not it is prayer, whether or not it is exercise or a combination, so that we are really taking care of ourselves. Because so many people, especially parents, were so involved with children and with work and our partners, and the days go by very, very quickly, and you find that what happened to me, what happened to my time, what happened to taking care of myself, and it is not selfish. It is really important. You know, I cite the examples, you know, that the airlines tell us to, you know, fasten our seatbelts before we fasten anybody else's, that we need to take care of ourselves. And if we don't take care of ourselves, I really believe that we are not doing not only a great disservice to ourselves, but it really impacts the other relationships in our lives. And I think that these days, too, more and more people are trying to find a purpose. And during the last few months, as people are reflecting and reevaluating, just kind of wondering, you know, what am I doing here? What is my purpose? Should I be volunteering? Should I get involved, for example, in the poor people's world with Reverend Barber? What should I be doing that will help me feel more connected to the world, to my environment? And for each of us, it's going to be different. But I think this has been a really, really good time where people are wondering, what am I doing and what could I be doing to make this world a better world? And of course, our goals. I think it's always important to have goals. something to look forward to. It really keeps us going, regardless of our age and stage in life. In fact, I have to tell you about an email and a conversation that I received over the weekend. Somehow, a woman found me. She said that she typed in the words seniors and psychotherapy, and I popped up. So what does this woman want? Well, apparently, she has a friend who is 95 years old, a woman who's 95, who's a former performer, and who apparently has been extremely, extremely depressed. So this woman was vetting me to see whether or not there was a possibility that I would be able to work with this 95-year-old woman. And I have to say, I was so impressed, first of all, that this woman had a friend who cared enough to vet me and probably some other therapists as well. And that at 95, she was still wanting and willing to figure things out in her life. And when I asked the woman, you know, what are this older woman's issues, she said that it was a fear of dying, a fear of really looking at the reality of her life that is, coming to an end. And that is real stuff. I don't know about you, but that is something that I have never come to terms with, and I suspect I probably never will. But the other thing that this woman told me was that the 95-year-old woman, that she had issues from her family of origin, specifically her mother, that she wanted to talk about, that she actually needed to talk about. Now, how impressive is that? So we had a couple of conversations, and this friend is supposed to be getting back to me actually today to see whether or not I passed her vetting and that I would start to work with this woman. And when I lived in Sarasota, I actually had a number of older women in their 80s and in their 90s. Their initial presenting problems happened to be depression. Both women had lost their spouses after, you know, being married for many, many years. But it was wonderful to see the transformation that happened with these women throughout our therapy. And I tell the story of Charlotte. Now, Charlotte was an 85-year-old woman who had initially contacted me because her husband died and she was very, very, very depressed. But Charlotte had this joie de vivre and this passion for life. She had been a performer in New York City, and she always, it was so cute. She wanted to be in love. She always wanted to be in love. So guess what happened with Charlotte? There was a young valet. She lived in a very, very posh it was a resort. It was independent living with various different levels so that you could go from the independent to a different level if you needed more care. So she became very, very attracted to this young valet who was parking her car, who parked the cars at this, independent living situation. And, you're not even going to believe what happened, but they actually ended up having a physical relationship. Now, I was very, very concerned. I mean, he was in his late 20s or 30s, and she was in her mid-80s. And I was concerned that, he may be after some money. And of course, she was very savvy, and we talked about this, that she was not going to be giving him any money. But I remember they had gone away for a weekend, and they were making out, and of course, one wonders what a man, and he was almost like a boy, in his late 20s or early 30s, would want to have, at least in terms of a sexual relationship or a physical relationship, with a woman of 85. But it was safe. She was happy. She was happy. She would get dressed up. She had a lot of flair and a lot of class and had an enormously wonderful sense of humor. And one day I was actually doing the therapy in her apartment. It was easier for her, and I didn't have any problems just driving over. So one day I arrive at Charlotte's apartment, and she said, "Beatty," she says, "I need to ask you something." And I said, "Look, Charlotte, we know each other very well. You can ask me anything that you want." She says, "I want you to teach me how to give oral sex." Now, this is an 85-year-old woman. I mean, how terrific is that? Now, I don't know what your reaction is, whether it's like, ooh, and why would she want to do that? So we went into her kitchen, and there happened to be a banana. And I showed her, basically the idea of what was involved in giving oral sex. And she was as happy can be. Now, after this young valet, so she's now 86, she's now 87, I was continuing to work with her once a week. She had other lovers, and she was someone who thrived, being in a romantic and passionate kind of a relationship. And I used to say to her, "Listen, I want to be you when I'm 90 years of age." I mean, it's a wonderful story. It's a true story. She never stopped wanting to live life to the fullest. She never, ever wanted to stop having passion and having love, however one defines love in that sort of a situation. And Charlotte died in her early 90s, and all I can tell you is that she died with a smile on her face. She lived life to the fullest, right to the end. And after she died, I'll never forget it, there was a UPS delivery, and she left me the most beautiful, beautiful hand-painted chest that Jim and I have in our apartment, and I think about her every single day, particularly in the context of, when people say to me, "I'm 50 and I'm 60 and I feel that I'm too old and I'm never going to find love and I'm never going to find romance and I'm never going to have sex again with, with somebody else." I think of the Charlottes, and she was not the lone person that I treated in Sarasota. At that time, there was an older population. Of course, it's changed now. Younger and younger people are moving in. It's actually a great, beautiful place to live. And I saw that. I saw older women in their 70s and 80s and 90s and men as well, absolutely blooming and blossoming because they were engaged with life, whether it was volunteering in a variety of different capacities, giving back, being involved, taking up new things, reaching out to people who they didn't know, they started to feel lonely and isolated. And that is my message to all of you. Because I was reading an article. Of course, I'm always reading articles, and I always want to be able to communicate to you some of the latest research findings and, interesting things that will actually help you improve the quality of your life and relationships. And there was a piece on loneliness in Psychology Today. And what it said is that in the last 50 years, the rates of loneliness have doubled in the United States. In a survey of over 20,000 American adults, it was found that almost half of respondents reported feeling alone, left out, and isolated. And further, one in four Americans shared that they rarely felt understood, and one in five people believe that they rarely or never feel close to people. And what about you? I mean, do you sometimes feel that way? Although sometimes we all feel that way, even if we are with a partner. So loneliness, I mean, you read articles and there is a loneliness epidemic around the world. It has been associated, as you may not be surprised, with cardiovascular problems and even premature death. Lonelier individuals are less likely to achieve quality sleep, in part because of the anxiety depression. Lonely individuals experience reductions in reasoning and creativity. I think it's hard to feel creative when you're feeling depressed and lonely and anxious. And in addition to these reduced abilities, according to the study, loneliness affects workplace productivity as lonely individuals report less job satisfaction and are more likely to face unemployment. Loneliness is also commonly correlated with mental health concerns such as, not to be surprised, anxiety and depression and suicidality. Yes, people who are actually thinking and, of course, sometimes, unfortunately, take steps to kill themselves. Similarly, loneliness is often associated with poor coping mechanisms such as compulsive technology, etc. And, you know, the question, of course, is what's causing the loneliness epidemic? So according to this article in the research, it says it seems as though loneliness is on the rise for Americans regardless of geographic location, gender, race, or ethnicity. One factor that has been considered is the potential influence of living independently. That's true, you know, our children, everybody lives, you know, thousands of miles away. People are living their own lives. We don't have the community that we had years ago. I mean, so many people, the kinds of communication, especially these days, is on Zoom, on Skype. I mean, it's not a bad thing, but it's not like it was, where you could meet up with somebody, not worry about the coronavirus, where you could hug, where you could kiss. And, you know, we know that now people are meeting, certainly people who are looking for relationships. The first kiss, the first interaction is actually on a screen. And according to Cigna's Loneliness Index, Cigna, the healthcare company, those who live with others, again, not to be surprised, are less likely to be lonely. However, it was noted that this did not apply to single parents or guardians. And additionally, as many people know, that living with others does not necessarily protect us against loneliness. Many people, and I'm sure you've heard many people say this, maybe you've even said this yourself, that you could be living with somebody and you can still feel incredibly lonely if you are feeling very disconnected. So that's some of the literature about loneliness. And as I mentioned last week, the piece that was in the New York Times, A Friend Program to Always Be There, this chatbot that have helped users cope with loneliness during the pandemic. And for those of you who may not know what it is, but it's just kind of like Siri on your computers, that you can now Google and you can now have somebody to talk to. Not a human, but this is what the artificial intelligence world is really all about. And, you know, at first glance, my reaction was, oh, my goodness. I mean, look at what is going on. Here we are talking to programmed, in quotes, artificial intelligence people in quotes. And yet, I believe, you know, I've changed my attitudes about a lot of things. I mean, years ago, when people would ask me about what I thought about meeting online or what I thought about the Zooming and all of the interactions that we're having on our computers, I was not thrilled. And yet, if this is a way, if these are means to help people feel less depressed, less anxious, less disconnected, less isolated, then I've changed my mind. I think it's a good thing. And yet the real human connection, I believe, is something that we still really need to strive toward. And I'm glad that the things are starting to open up and that real people, other than the Suris on our computer, are going to be able to start getting together more and more and feeling that real human face-to-face connection, which is something that we all really, really do need. I mean, the computer is great. It helps us access all kinds of information. But, you know, experts, including myself, I mean, it really is not a substitute for the real thing. And I'm encouraging my patients, I'm encouraging friends to find ways to get together face to face with real people and to move ourselves out of our maybe comfort or our discomfort zones. And that goes a long, long way in helping us feel much better, less depressed, less disconnected. Because it's a very, very difficult time in our society today. And I know that I'm looking at the clock. There was an article that I wanted to talk with you about that I will definitely discuss next week. And this was a bit of a surprise for me. Millennials and the loneliness epidemic. For those of you who listened to the show a couple of weeks ago, I had Lindsay Meister. And she has a podcast. We met at Acme, and she is a millennial, and her focus, of course, has been helping millennials with their dating and their relationship lives. But something that, again, was a bit surprising was that the Economist and the Kaiser Family Foundation, more than 2 in 10 adults in the United States, 22%, in the United Kingdom, 23%, say that they always or often feel lonely, lack companionship, or feel left out or isolated. And figures like these have been ubiquitous in the press lately, with alarming statistics about loneliness now accompanied by equally alarming warnings that it's stunting our lives and outright killing us. And I am hearing this more and more in my practice. In fact, there are two women that I treat in their 60s, and both of them, they're not suicidal, but they are both basically saying, why am I still here? And I hope I'm not going to live a long life. And of course, they reassure me that they're not going to do anything to hasten their departure from this life. But what they're saying is that the loneliness is actually killing them. So we are working very, very hard on the various different things that they can do to not feel so isolated and to find ways to connect over and above online face-to-face with people. But the Economist findings, they add a wave of recent research showing high levels of loneliness, and a recent Cigna, that's the healthcare company survey, revealed that nearly half of Americans always or sometimes feel alone, that's 46%, or left out, 47%, fully 54% that they always or sometimes feel that no one knows them well. And loneliness is not just a U.S. phenomenon. And in a nationwide survey released in October from the BBC, a third of Britons said that they often or very often feel lonely. Nearly half of Britons over 65 consider the television or pets their main source of company. We need to get out. Whether it's going to church, churches are opening, or synagogues, or some type of venue where we are in a face-to-face situation with real people. In Japan, there are more than 500,000 people under 40 who haven't left their houses or interacted with anyone for at least 6 months. So it's not just something here in the United States. But there are all kinds of things, and you know, I'm the eternal optimist here, that we can actually do. And I suggest that we all make lists, a to-do list of things that can really help us find ways to lessen the loneliness, lessen the isolation, and connect with people. And for many, many people, it's going to mean getting out of our comfort zone. But scientists have long known that loneliness is emotionally painful and can lead to a lot of psychiatric disorders. Of course, we know the depression, the anxiety, schizophrenia, and even hallucinatory delirium, okay? So we know what isolation can actually do to us. But I want to talk a lot more about that next week. And there was something else that I wanted to deal with, and that is the dangers, you're going to be surprised to hear me say this, of individual psychotherapy if we are trying to fix broken relationships. And this is going to be a very interesting show about the perils of individual therapy in dealing with relationship problems. And I have a number of case studies that I want to share with you. Well, everybody, another hour, I can't believe it's almost 4 o'clock here in New York City, has come and gone. I want to thank you all for listening, for texting, for emailing, and I'm hoping that there's some little thing that I said today that will make a qualitative difference in your life and your relationships. And I want to end the show, as I do every single week, with my favorite song, and that is "What the World Needs Now Is Love, Sweet Love."